bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
This half hour brought to you by NIL Game Changers, your ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness opportunities. Whether you're a business, an athlete, these are the people to turn to. Go to NILGameChangers.org to start your journey today. Jim Leland had quite a journey during the course of his life, eventually becoming the manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates, world championship manager of the Florida Marlins, and then with the Detroit Tigers, bringing them to the World Series. Well, he made it to Cooperstown. He's in the Hall of Fame. John Parrotto covered him for years. John, welcome. It's so great to have you back from Cooperstown and a chance to talk about Jim. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be with you.
Jim Leland did a lot of great things over the course of his career, Pirates, Marlins, Tigers in particular. To you, what made him a special figure, especially in Pirates history?
Well, you know, when he came to the Pittsburgh in 86, he was relatively unknown. He had managed in the Tigers farm system for 11 years, and then he was the White Sox third base coach under Tony La Russa for 4 years. And when he got the job, the Pittsburgh Press, the now defunct Pittsburgh Press, the headline was Jim Who. So he really came in as a very unknown person, and he took over a team that had lost 105 games in 1985. You'd had the Pittsburgh drug trials that September that totally overshadowed the end of the baseball season. You had the team almost move to Denver in 1985 into a public-private consortium of 13 businesses in Pittsburgh and institutions all combined to buy the team from the Galbraith family and keep it in Pittsburgh. So he walked into an unbelievably tough situation in 86, and by 88, the Pirates had come in, had a winning season and came in second place in the National League East to the Mets. And then 90, 91, and 92, they won the division. So basically, Leland came in and transformed, had a large part in transforming the Pirates from a laughingstock and one of the worst franchises in baseball to a winner. And, you know, he was beloved in Pittsburgh. He married a girl from Pittsburgh. He set roots in Pittsburgh, still has a home in Pittsburgh. And he just became a beloved figure. And, you know, I thought it was very poignant what he said yesterday in his speech. He said his 11 years in Pittsburgh, it always felt like him and friends instead of him and fans.
Yeah, and not only that, to do what he did, and I go back to that era, I felt it wasn't just his ability to make lineups and make moves during the games, because I always felt he was an outstanding strategist. But I felt to get that job and to do that job, you had to have a certain personality to do that job. What kind of personality did Jim Leland bring to the table that made him different than other people?
You know, and he always brought this up. He grew up in Perrysburg, Ohio, up in the northwest corner of the state, right near Toledo, right outside of Toledo. And he was one of 11 brothers and sisters. So he had a lot of different personalities he dealt with growing up with that many siblings and his mother and father. And the one thing he was great is he could relate all kinds of people, white players, black players, Latin players. He could, you know, he connected with his coaching staff. He connected with the front office. He connected with the bat boys, the trainers, the, you know, everybody, even the media, the guys that covered him. You know, he was good to us. I mean, he would tell us what was going on, and when he couldn't say something, he would be honest about it instead of making up a lie. And those kind of relationships, when you're honest with people, they go a long way. And Steve, I first met him in 86. My first year covering him was 88 as a full-time baseball writer. Right. And we still have a very good relationship 38 years later. So, I mean, that's just the kind of guy he is and the kind of loyalty he inspires from people who work for him.
But when you're managing the Pirates, you don't know what the front office is going to do or not do. And in the end, that team was broken up. And then he goes to the Marlins, wins there, and then to the Tigers. What does it tell us about Jim Leland, the manager, that he could he excelled in other organizations and not just in Pittsburgh?
Oh, it's how adaptable he is. And, you know, like you just pointed out, I mean, in Pittsburgh, unfortunately, at one time they had the third highest payroll in baseball in 1991. And they had Ted Simmons came in as general manager. They brought in a new club president, and they said they had to take the payroll down from $57 million to $20 million. So that meant a lot of the good players either weren't tried to re-sign in free agency or were traded before they got to free agency. And Leland struggled with that, especially for the fact that they came oh so close to the World Series all 3 years in 90, 91, and 92 mm-hmm. and fell short. But like you said, he went to Florida. They brought in all kind of free agents, made all kind of trades, had basically a brand new team fitting a bunch of new pieces together, and he won the World Series the first year. And then in Detroit, you know, he goes in there and they were awful. Yeah. And his first year, he goes to the World Series. So, you know, a lot of things. One, like you said, a great strategist, a great tactician. But two, just the way he connects with people, the way he set the culture, the way he made the clubhouse such a fun atmosphere to play in and work in, and just this ability to connect with people and get them to believe in themselves. And he did that time and time again with different players that really just blossomed under his under him being the manager. And you know, I really can't say enough about him. I've met a lot of people. I'm 60 years old, and I've met a lot of people in my life, but there are very, very few with Jim Leland's ability to communicate and to put someone at ease and make somebody feel welcome, and somebody who just you just gravitate toward him. He just has that kind of personality.
What was it? You know, Barry Bonds is certainly can be a difficult guy to deal with. How did Bonds feel about Jim Leland?
He loved Leland, you know, and everybody goes back to that day in 1991 in spring training when Leland and Bonds had their very public argument during a workout, and, you know, went on, you know, was shown all over the place, national TV, and, well, the internet wasn't around then, but if you go to YouTube, it's easy to find. And, you know, I think a lot of people thought because of that they hated each other. But the thing about Jim was, and this was great because, I mean, when I covered him, I wrote some things he didn't particularly like sometimes, and he would let me know about it. And the one thing about Jim, if he got mad at you, he didn't hold a grudge. I mean, like 15 minutes later, it was over. And I can say that from personal experience, and I know dozens and dozens of players who said the same thing. You know, if he got on you, there was a reason for it. And it was, he wanted, especially player-wise, he wanted to make them better. And sometimes to make a player better, you've got to get on them and you've got to be tough with them. And I think they understood that, or they came to understand that over time and realized that he had their best interest at heart. And he really did care for him and love him. And it wasn't a case that he hated him. He just wanted them to be better people and better players.
Well, I mean, look. In the end, if you can, like Bill O'Brien and Tom Brady had a famous one in Washington one day over Landover, and they both respect the heck out of each other. Doesn't mean, it just turns out life plays out in public for sports figures. It doesn't play out, you know, behind closed doors like it does in some other places. And obviously, Leland was a guy to be respected. What's your personal favorite story with all your dealings with him about Jim Leland?
The personal is I covered the Pirates for paper in Beaver County, the Beaver County Times, for 21 years, and then the Times decided to cut back, and they weren't covering the Pirates anymore, so I was out of a job, and Bob Nutting hired me to cover the Pirates for his newspapers for a year, and because I wouldn't be a rah-rah cheerleader, that didn't last. It lasted one season and move on, and I was a free agent writer, and I became a freelancer, and I picked up a lot of gigs for different national publications. So it was my first year where I wasn't a Pirate beat guy for 22 years, and I mean rightly or wrongly, it was my identity. I'd done it for so long, and I felt a little uncomfortable when I was making the tour of camps throughout Florida. And one day I stopped in Lakeland where the Tigers train, and Jim and I talked after the workout, and we ended up sitting there chit-chatting for a little bit more, and he goes, there's something really bothering you, isn't there? And I said, yeah. And he goes, what? And I said, you know, he'd known what happened in Pittsburgh with me, even though he's managing the Tigers. And he told me, he said, at the end, we get up, he shakes my hand, really grasps it harder than normal, and holds on to it for a minute, and try not to tear up here, but he said, you know, John, you're always welcome in the Tigers clubhouse, and I'm sure you're welcome in any other clubhouse in baseball, too. And at that point in time in my career, I needed to hear that. And that was 14 years ago, and it still sticks with me.
Wow. Wow. That's really impactful. There were other speeches yesterday, and obviously you're locked in on Jim Leland's. But did anybody else say anything that yesterday's setback went, wow, something you didn't know before about the other inductees?
Really, and I mean, they all were good, and they all thanked everyone. And Joe Mauer was, especially more poignant. Tom, well, they all were good. Adrian Beltre, Todd Helton, but I thought Joe Mauer explained it well. Is he had such a unique situation. He was the best college or the best high school quarterback in the country, and the best high school baseball player in the country his senior year at Creighton-Durham Hall in high school in St. Paul. So he was the local boy, but there were a lot of people that thought the Twins should draft somebody closer to being ready for the big leagues. They had the number one pick that year, and they went with Joe Mauer. And Joe turned into a great player. He won three batting titles. And he said, he talked a little bit about the pressure, of the potential pressure of being the hometown kid playing for the hometown team, and how the Twins fans always supported him, always were behind him. And then he got choked up a little, which was understandable. And the largest portion of fans in the attendance yesterday were definitely Twins fans. I know at the hotel I stayed in, it was just Twins fans. I mean, it was like all Twins fans, except there was one wedding. And other than that, I think every other guest except my wife and I were Twins fans from Minnesota. Whoa. So there was a really big throng of fans for Joe, and it was really cool to see. I mean, I dealt with him a few times over the years. I don't profess to know him real well, but always such a nice guy, always accommodating, always friendly, and it was really cool to see how many people. And that's not an easy trip to go from Minnesota to Cooperstown, and you know, there's no main highways near there. There's no major airports near Cooperstown, so if you want to go from Minneapolis, I should say, to Cooperstown, you really, really got to work at it to get there. And there were thousands and thousands of Minnesotans there yesterday.
Is part of that, though, John, Mauer played his entire career with Minnesota, which, as you and I both know, has become a rarity across the board. Do you think that was a factor in all this? A hometown hero, but never played anywhere else. I mean, Beltre played a bunch of places. I mean, the one season he played in Boston, my son and I went to a game. He had a grand slam, won a game, but that was the only year he was in Boston.
Oh, yeah, I think it definitely has something to do with it, no doubt. And, you know, especially the hometown kid on top of it, playing his whole career with the Twins. And, you know, there were, you know, he had his ups and downs. You know, he won the three batting titles as a catcher, which no other catcher has ever done. And then he had the concussion problems, taking, you know, foul balls off the mask and things like that. He eventually moved to first base, and, you know, the concussions took their toll. He wasn't a star player his last few years in the big leagues. He was still a good player, but he had certainly declined. And, you know, and there were some people that thought, well, maybe he should get traded. Maybe they should move on from him. But the Twins stuck with him, and the fans stuck with him. And, you know, it really is just a really neat story. Yeah. And really, it was really fun. It almost had more of that feel of a high school or college atmosphere, where, hey, this is our guy, this is our school's guy, instead of, you know, professional team's guy. And that really stood out to me yesterday as far as the fans. I just thought it was really, really neat, Steve.
John, over the years, you know, a lot of things have changed. You know, maybe they've tried to add it, make it a little bit better. Sometimes they make a change, it's worse. You've been, I'm going to assume this is not the first Hall of Fame one you've been to. So in that guise, is it still the same, feel the same, or is there a little bit different compared to other years you've gone?
The one thing I noticed is I hadn't been there in 10 years, and there's a lot more media that covers it now. Now, also, part of that may have been Adrian Beltre being Dominican, and there was a lot of press in the Dominican Republic there, too, that maybe ordinarily wouldn't have been there if, you know, for the American players. But, yeah, the thing has kind of changed. And like everything else, it's become a little more corporate and a little more buttoned-down and a little more staged than it was 10 years ago, or certainly the first time I went in 2001 when Bill Mazeroski was inducted with mm-hmm. Dave Winfield and Kirby Puckett that year. But it's still a neat town. It really is. It's a village. It's the village of Cooperstown is the official name of the place. And I don't know if you've ever been there, Steve, but it's a magical little place.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm a hard-bitten guy. I've covered baseball 37 years, and you know, I'm kind of a little cynical, like most people would have done it this long. But you go there, and there's something special there. It reminds me of, in the movie It's a Wonderful Life, the town of Bedford mm-hmm. Falls.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what it really reminds me of, yeah. except it's a real-life thing, and it's 70-some years after the movie was released.
I agree. I've been there twice. I've gone through the Hall of Fame a couple different times in my lifetime, and it's quaint and special. Finally, I want to ask you about Rob Manfred. Now, I know he's staying on through 29 or something like that, but he always comes off as stiff, whether it's interviews. I mean, there's just not the passion for the game. You just don't sense it. Is he like that at this as well? Is he just that stiff corporate figure, or is there a little more warmth to him that we didn't realize?
Yeah, I mean, he just doesn't resonate with fans, and I think you hit it perfectly, Steve. It just, he doesn't seem to have a passion for the game. It seems more like he's the CEO of the game, and his job is to make as much profits as he can make, like any other business. And we know, I mean, professional sports are indeed a business, but there's something different about professional sports where there's a passion to it more. I mean, people don't root for U.S. Steel or IBM or Microsoft. I mean, people root for the Yankees and the Pirates and the Phillies and the California Angels and go right down the list. And, yeah, he come. You know, even yesterday, he's from that neck of the woods. He grew up in Rome, New York, which is only even quite an hour from Cooperstown. And, of course, the MC, Brian Kenny from MLB Network, said, "Here are our local man from Rome, New York, Rob Manfred," and nobody booed him, but nobody either cheered him either. It was just kind of nothing. Yeah.
It's just I want my people around me to love the game. All right.
Yeah.
And love the sport. I know he's an attorney. But you can't act the entire time like you're an attorney. This is sport. This is sports. I know it's a business, but it's a business that brings with it passion of the fans who are around it. You have to have a feel for that. And see, that's the part I don't think he has a feel for at all.
No, he just doesn't seem to enjoy. Whereas me or you, if we were in that position and we had a chance to be there on the dais at Cooperstown with 50-some Hall of Famers sitting behind us, it would be the thrill of a lifetime. But for him, it's almost like it's not even business as usual. It's almost like, I'm bothered to be here. I wish I could be somewhere other than here. And it's just mind-blowing, Steve. I mean, it is.
I mean, John, you and I would have goosebumps. And he's like, okay, and you're Sandy Koufax. Who'd you pitch for? Okay.
Really.
always a pleasure, John. I love talking baseball with you. Appreciate you so much. Thanks for the time.
My pleasure, Steve. Anytime. Glad. Always good to speak with you, too.
John Parrotto does a great job of covering baseball, the Pirates, Always great to have him on the show. It's always a great conversation with him, and appreciate him very, very much. And this half hour brought to you by NIL Game Changers, your ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness opportunities. Business, athlete, they're the ones to turn to. Start your journey today at NILGameChangers.org. We'll shift gears and talk about the Sixers with Keith Pompey in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Henry Ford started building trucks in 1917, and Sunbury Motors has been selling them ever since. SMC has over 100 new Ford trucks with savings of up to $12,116 and financing as low as 0% during their annual July truck sale. Choose from 16 of the top-selling 2024 Ford Mavericks. They get up to 42 miles per gallon, and Sunbury Motors has them priced as low as $27,835. SMC has Central PA's largest selection of new Ford F-150s with 48 to pick from, and well-equipped Supercrew XLTs start at just $49,831. Sunbury Motors has a wide selection of Super Duty pickups with 36 to choose from, including regular cabs, super cabs, super crews, and utility bodies with gas or diesel engines. SMC is where you want to be in July for the hottest deals on new Ford trucks. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza is a fifth generation Ford dealer, proudly owned by the Mertz family for over a century.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
You want your young athlete to get the most out of life and NIL. You need a roadmap, a strategic approach. NIL Game Changers help student athletes earn while they learn in their collegiate journey. Driven by former student athletes and coaches who work as NIL sports agents and content media designers, they'll guide both student and family, starting with high school students looking toward college and those already in college. Get a seasoned team of marketing experts with a background in athletics and coaching. Visit NILGameChangers.org, the ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness opportunities.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, NIL Game Changers, and Sunbury Motor Company. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
This half hour brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And now we turn to the NBA, Keith Pompey, covering the Philadelphia 76ers. Keith, great to have you with us.
Hey, I'm doing well. Yourself?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. You've been asked a billion times about Paul George going to the Sixers, so I will make it a billion and one about the fit, in your opinion, of Paul George with Maxi and Embiid. How do you feel he fits?
I mean, I feel like he's a pretty good fit. I mean, because when you look at it, like, you know, you look at Paul George, you look at Maxi, you look at Embiid, you know, all three of them are different positions, right? You look at Paul George, he's a guy who brings it on the defensive end. You know, he's a standout wing. He can also handle the ball. And then you see Maxi, you know, a point guard, a combo guard, and Joel Embiid, a center. So I think it's a really good fit because, you know, these are three guys who should be able to coexist together because they all bring different things to the game. You know, so I look at Paul as a, you know, a quality defender, a quality wing defender who can help him out greatly.
Maxi got a terrific deal out of this because of how he's played. You've watched him all the time. Where has he made the improvements to allow us to see what we are seeing now?
Oh, that's a great question. I think the biggest improvement is his ability to run an offense, right? You know, because when you looked at it before, you said, oh, there's no way in heck that this guy can be a quality point guard. Like, maybe he can be like, you know, a guy who can handle the ball at times. But you look at him and you say he can't run an offense. That was the big question mark. So that's been the major, I would like to say that's been the major improvement. We all knew that he could score points. We all knew that he can, you know, hit threes. But I think running an offense has been the biggest improvement that made him become an all-star.
Something that makes the championship teams like Denver and the Celtics is that, yes, they have stars, but the, quote, people that they fit in around them. And in the Celtics case, it's Derek White, it's Drew Holiday, and then guys off the bench like Hauser and, of course, Al Horford. The Sixers have not fit parts around their stars as well. So when you look at the draft, coming in from Duke and the big guy from UCLA, you know, what kind of fit can they be for this team?
You know, they can be pretty good fits. Now, the guy from UCLA, I don't really expect him to play a lot.
No.
Like, I'm looking at him right now. He's going to be the third-string center.
Right.
But his name is Bona, Adem Bona. But when you look at the guy from Duke, his name is Jarrett McCann. I look to him to have a vital role, to play a key role for them. Because he's a guy who can have that come off the bench, stretch a defense. You know, when Maxie's on the floor, when Maxie's off the floor and other people, you know, you can spread the floor and try to see, let them go to work. But the thing is, the biggest role is, when you look at the Sixers, when they had Jimmy Butler, they had J.J. Redick. You know, J.J. Redick was like the sharpshooter.
Yes.
I see him coming in and being that, coming off of screens, hitting shots. You know, so to me, that's his biggest role. Now, again, part of the problem is like him and Maxie, you know, that's a really, really small backcourt.
Yes.
So he's not going to start. He's going to come off the bench. But for right now, for a championship team, his best asset is his ability to shoot. And also, he's a winner. Like, he gets after it. But Bona, the guy, the center that they got in the second round, I don't – like, if you got
to
play him a lot of minutes,
yeah,
I think the Sixers may be in trouble.
Yeah, no,
and that's
no.
not a knock against him.
No.
But when you have Joel Embiid and you have Andre Drummond as your first two centers, you know, Bona's going to be a guy who, you know, an insurance policy, so to speak.
He's going to have a good view of the game because it's going to be on the sideline.
Yeah.
I thought Andre Drummond was a good pickup. What was your thought on that?
Oh, he was a huge pickup. And it's funny because after they traded him, it was weird. Like, they traded him, and then all of a sudden they go to the playoffs and Joel gets injured. And they're like, wow, here we go. Like, I mean, literally, Joel got injured that first playoff series. And then he missed the first two games, I believe, in that one, in the second round. So it's like they've been trying to get him back since. I mean, they were, you know, this past season, they thought they had a trade for him, and it fell through in the final second. But him, you look at him, he's going to be a huge benefit because the Sixers, when you look at the 76ers, they were a team who struggled mightily in rebounding. And you look at Andre Drummond, that's what he does. He's a great rebounder. Also, he's a starter-level center. You know, he's been a backup. He was a multi-time all-star. But when he comes in there, it's kind of like you have a guy, you're not going to utilize him the same way you utilize Joel. But at the same time, you have a guy that, you know, can still score points, can do things. And you don't have to worry about on the defensive end of getting abused and getting out rebounds and things like that. So he's a great pickup. As much as we talk about Paul George, don't get me wrong.
Right.
Paul George is huge. But when you look at Drummond and you look at the weaknesses that they've had when Embiid didn't play, being able to get that guy was extremely vital for the Sixers' success.
All right, I want to ask you now about the single most talked about second round pick in the history of the NBA. And I know you're in Salt Lake. All right, so you're not down in Vegas to see any of this live. But look, Dalton Connect was the Lakers' first round pick. And I thought that was a good first round pick, by the way. I thought that was a good first round pick. Yeah, I agree. In fact, I'll go with you. I thought it was a great pick. So I have zero issue as to whether he was the second round pick, 55th overall. I mean, let's be realistic about what the NBA draft is. But he has so much hype around him. What's just your general thought on how it played out and where he is with his game?
You know, it's weird. Like, you know, you get it. Like, you understand, you know, a year ago. Let's go back a year ago, right, when LeBron said, hey, I would love playing with my son.
Right.
And at that point, everyone knew that you had a sense. You didn't know, but you felt like the Sixers were going to draft him, right? I'm not the Sixers. I'm sorry, the Lakers. You felt like the Lakers were going to draft this guy.
Right.
But then all of a sudden, it's like this comes out, and it became – and I was at the pre-draft camp, right, Chicago.
Yeah.
And it became one of those things where no one cared about the other lottery picks or any of the lottery picks. It was all about him. I mean, he was the headliner. But then when the game came out, you look at it and you say, wow, he's struggling a little bit. I mean, he's not playing well. And then when we get to the draft and you get to everything and you're saying to yourself, like, you know, they're saying we don't want anybody else to draft them, this and that, da da da. And it's like, wow, this is a lot of hype for a guy who's typically a late second round pick. And now you go and you see how he's playing now, how he played in that one game, and he struggled. In a way, you feel sorry for the guy, but at the same time, you feel like he's being set up for failure.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is kind of like, you know, is the more that they talk about him, the more like money that he gets, the more that he's like being treated like a lottery pick, it's kind of sort of, in my opinion, could backfire on the kid. Because right now, like you said, think about it. Have you ever talked about a 55 pick from another team? I mean, not in Pennsylvania on your show?
No.
You know what I mean? So this is it's just one of those things where I feel like he's going to be set up. If everything that he does is going to be, dissected. And you know, every time they do stuff, like, for instance, he struggled. And they came out and then what was it? Well, we don't care about what he does in Summer League. It doesn't matter. So, you know, it just seems like people are putting a bullseye on this kid. They don't realize it, but they are. They're putting a bullseye on him.
I agree with all of that. And the part about him, because I watched, because with USC coming into the Big Ten, I tried to take a little bit of time in the past season to take a look at Oregon, Washington, UCLA, and USC just to get at least a feel for them. That's like Bona, for example. I saw him play a couple times for UCLA. Well, that also meant that Bronny James played. And part about him I just can't tell is how much he was affected by the cardiac arrest and all the time that he missed. And I just don't know how that figures into what we're even seeing right now, because he hasn't really played a lot in the last year.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because, you know, you look at it and, you know, initially – when he made the McDonald's All-American game, right?
Yeah.
Before all that happened, you know, you're saying, wow, that's crazy. How did he make it? He's the 66th, you know, recruit in the country. So someone, he passed on up.
Yeah.
But then in that game, he played well.
He
actually played well in the McDonald's All-American game. Like, he wasn't a superstar, but he was knocking down threes, and it looked like, you know, he belonged, right?
Yeah.
So then he has that, the cardiac arrest, and then he's struggling. But, you know, it's weird, so we don't know. But at the same time, if it was another kid, I mean, we have to be honest with ourselves.
That's
with the
right.
Stats that he put up, they would have said, hey, son, it's your best bet to stay in school another year
right.
to prove yourself.
That's right.
But, you know, he didn't have to. So, you know, so, yeah, like, I don't know how much that impacted. But at the same time, you have to realize that he did get some special privileges because of who he is.
Right. And I think what you said is so spot on is, and it's part the Lakers, it's part LeBron, and it's absolutely part ESPN.
They're setting
him up for failure. He won't be able to do enough for anybody because of what's happened from those three entities that's not allowing him to be him.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I do believe that too, because, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, in a perfect world, you get him, you know, you give him his money, what have you, and you say, okay, he's going to be a couple year, he's going to be a project. He right. goes down to the G League, this and that. Now, who knows, that may be the plan. But the more media attention that he gets and the more that you got people up there vouching for him and saying stuff and then, you know, bringing up things like, hey, this isn't, this is nepotism, but there's been nepotism in the league for years.
Yeah.
It's been this and it's been that and, you know, yada, yada. Now, listen, I'm just going to say this. I had some kids, some guys who I went to college with. And their fathers were like, you know, CEO. One guy in particular, his dad was a CEO. Mm-hmm. And we all knew after he graduated that he was going to be, you know, a big wig in the business, right?
Right.
But at the same time, he did. Now, who knows? I don't know what his grade point average was. But at the same time, he did graduate, right? He graduated and he did stuff. And to this day, he's still a successful businessman. Mm-hmm. But he's been able to hold his own after that, right?
Yeah.
So to me, it's like when the ESPN and other people keep making these excuses, it's kind of like, well, why do we have to bring this up?
Right.
Like, why are you making excuses? And secondly, you know, there's been other father-son tandems in the NBA, right? But, you know, they didn't make the excuses. I mean, you know, they didn't do it. I mean, think about it. Look at Steph Curry.
Yeah. From,
we're talking about a kid, Steph Curry, whose father, Dale, was a great, you know, sharpshooter in this thing. Steph Curry, North Carolina, even though his dad was the man, North Carolina and Duke didn't even give him a scholarship.
That's right.
He goes to Davidson, and he made a name for himself, right? You understand what I'm saying? Like, so things like that happen. I mean, you look at Dominique Wilkins. He had his brother, Gerald Wilkins, had a son who ended up going to playing, I believe he played at NC State.
He did.
And then from there, he had a couple years in the NBA. So, you know, but nothing was built up the way this one was. And I think that the hype and making excuses, and sometimes it comes down to people want to stay in good grace. They don't want, like, LeBron. They don't want LeBron's camp saying, we don't want to deal with y'all. But what they'll do is they'll talk and they'll make excuses and say whatever they can just so when that something happens, they'll be one of the first people or first persons to get that text message.
Right.
You know what I mean? So
yeah.
it is what it is, but at the same time, it's unfortunate because what they're doing is a lot of guys now, and y'all know it happens. You're going to go up against a guy who feels like he's been slighted,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to go at this kid, and they're going to try to embarrass the kid. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. like the kid suddenly becomes a bullseye. And I'm going to tell you this. I was there in Chicago, interviewed him. He's the type of kid that when you talk to him and this and that, you are pulling for this guy.
Right.
I mean, I was pulling for him,
yeah.
and I still am. I mean, he seems like a great young man.
Yep.
But you're right. All this attention is just putting a bullseye on the kid.
Final question. It's not going to be about him. You go to a summer league. You go to a summer league game with that trained eye of yours. Keith, what do you look for in a summer league game? Fans are looking for something. What are you looking for, if anything?
You know, it's crazy. I remember the first time I was there, I was like covering it like it was an NBA game, and the other reporters were like, dude, what are you doing? Half of these guys aren't going to be here. Like 80% of them. So a lot of times I look at it and see what a guy worked on, right?
Right.
You know, like, for instance, Ricky Council yesterday was phenomenal, and he played well. You know, coming out, he made 5 of 10 threes. Beforehand, that wasn't a strong suit of his when he got drafted a year ago.
That's right.
So that tells me how much work he put in on his game and how, you know, it's not. So it's things like that I look at. I look at, now, again, the guy, Jarrett McCann, he's supposed to be a shooter. He came in as a shooter. Now, his shot wasn't falling, but I was looking to see how could he run an offense, the tenacity he brings, you know, other things that he can do on the floor. Now, again, the competition level isn't going to be as good as it is, not even in the preseason, right? But those are the type of things that you want to see. And a lot of times when you got a first-round pick, are they going to dominate? Now, there was a kid who went to from Philadelphia who went to Kentucky. Now, he was an undrafted guy, but he was one of the nation's top recruits the year before. And you look at him and you want to see aggressiveness. You don't want to see a guy who's just fitting in. And unfortunately, he didn't show that. He was just trying to fit in. So those are the things that you look at more so than points. It's just that if it's a veteran, a first-year guy or second-year guy, what did he work on in the offseason? The other guy, what can he do when his shot isn't falling? Can he lead an offense? Can he still put an imprint on the game? And then those other guys who have question marks, you want to see them be aggressive. So those are the things that I look for. The games are really, you know, meaningless to me. The score of the game, rather.
Right.
But it's what they do individually.
Yeah, they went Justin Edwards, probably the Kentucky guy, right?
Yeah. I'm sorry for not naming
him. No. That's fine. Just so everybody knows, if you win the summer league, you don't get a parade. And the competition in practice, when they get to the preseason, just in practice, is going to be better than this. All right, so.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Right. No, before I go, I just want to say, I remember my first summer league. I'm looking at these guys. I'm seeing all these dudes, you know, who came in from overseas and were ex-NBA players. And I'm like, hey, this is going to be great. And I'm like, well, how come they ain't playing? And the guy said, man, they just got them there for practice. Like, they just practice players. And I was like, oh, so this is what summer league is like. They're like, yeah, dude, that's all it is.
That's all it is. It's televised practices. All right.
Exactly.
Keith, always a pleasure. Great perspective. Appreciate you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate being on the show.
Keith Pompey on the NBA. This half hour brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.